is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Country artist Deborah Allen is my special guest on the show today. She recently released a new album entitled Hear Me Now, and all of the songs on it are written or co-written by her. The album's first single is a fun country shuffle called Anything Other Than Love. The album also features a tribute to Elvis, a very personal song for her, called Amazing Graceland. It should come as no surprise that she's a talented songwriter, with her songs have being recorded by acts like Leanne Rimes, Brooks and Dunn, Conway Twitty. The list goes on, and it even includes Fleetwood Mac. And I'm sure you'll recall her 80s smash, Baby I Lied, which earned her a couple of Grammy nominations, one for her singing and one for her songwriting. It's my pleasure to welcome Deborah Allen to the show. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, David. It's so great to talk with you today.
It is great to talk with you as well. I've known your music for so long, from Baby I Lied to all these hits that you've written over the years that I grew up listening to on the radio, from Janie Fricke to John Conley, I'm Only In It for the Love, a catchy song from him. Again, it's so great to have you on the show, and we're going to get into the new album as well. Talk about your influences growing up in Memphis, because that really resonates in you to this day.
Yes, it really does. I did grow up in Memphis, and of course was very influenced by the fact that the King of Rock and Roll was right there in our midst, Elvis Presley, and you know, we had a whole lot of other greats there too, like Jerry Lee Lewis, and then of course Johnny Cash recorded there, and then on the R&B side we had Al Green, who was such a great influence too in music, you know, and one of my best friends played on all those records. His name was Teeny Hodges. So, you know, we're just so lucky to get to grow up in such a rich, fertile ground of soulful music. You know, no matter how it's categorized, it was just a great place to grow up and learn about music and be influenced.
And the song that is on the new album is called Amazing Graceland. And you wrote it, I understand, a couple of Christmases back when you were visiting Graceland, and it just hits you how, I guess, moving and vibrant the place is to this day, and with sort of the memory of Elvis and all that he left behind with his music.
Exactly. Well, yeah, you know, my parents actually upholstered and designed Elvis's very first touring bus. And when the Memphis Mafia brought the bus over to my daddy's upholstery shop, they were, you know, a lot of fun and kind of rowdy back then, and my daddy couldn't get anything done at all, so he wound up bringing the bus out to our house. So my sister Judy and I wound up camping out in that bus, and you know, I'll laugh and say, yes, I slept in Elvis's bed, but I was only 3 years old, and he wasn't there. So it kind of, you know, it's just kind of a fun thing to say. But you know, we used to also, going up to my cousin's house, we used to pass by Graceland all the time, and sometimes we'd look up and see Elvis up there, you know, riding his horses with his friends, or if the gate was open, we'd be like, oh, I wonder who's up there. But oddly enough, as close as I came to Elvis and as much as he was in our midst, I never really went in his home until, as you mentioned, two Christmases ago, I was asked to perform at a private event at Graceland for a corporation, and they had leased the whole entire estate for the evening, so I got to spend a lot of time in there. And I'm telling you, Dave, when I stepped my foot through that front door, the very moment that I stepped my foot through the door, it's like I could feel his spirit just envelop me, and it just got stronger and stronger with every room I went through. And on the way back to Nashville, the one word that kept going through my mind was amazing. That was just amazing. And I was so inspired. By the time I hit my back door in Nashville, I walked straight in and went straight to my piano and started writing the song, Amazing Graceland.
What an incredible story. I understand that song was also used and played during the annual Candlelight Vigil for Elvis.
It was, and that was such a huge compliment because, you know, my good friend George Klein, who actually gave me my very first job in professional entertainment. I was one of his dancers on this show called Dance Party in Memphis. And he is still to this day does a show on XM Satellite Radio for the Elvis Hour. And on the Elvis Hour, you can only play Elvis music. So for them to debut Amazing Graceland on the Elvis Hour and play it all throughout, Elvis Week while we were in Memphis, and I performed it several times there too, was just a huge compliment because, you know, just to hear Amazing Graceland and right after Amazing Graceland, you hear Elvis singing Amazing Grace. It was just like I was just knocked out and just so excited and I was really speechless, really. It was pretty incredible.
I'll bet. And again, that is such a powerful song on the new album. If we go back a bit in time, I was fascinated to read about this back in, I guess it was the late 70s. You had the opportunity to record on some unfinished duet tracks from country legend Jim Reeves. So you're on several of those, and I think you were credited for a while as the mystery singer.
I was. You know, that was the genius of Joe Galante. He's such a brilliant marketer. And I had been hanging out with some of my friends who it was a number one party. And at the end of the party, the way it sometimes happens here in Nashville, you know, they'll pass the guitar around. And so I sang a couple of songs, but I didn't realize that Bud Logan, who used to be the bass player for Jim Reeves, was there and had heard me sing. And the next day, he had his engineer contact me and ask me if I would be interested in singing with Jim Reeves. And I was like, yeah, I mean, are you talking about the man that sang Put Your Sweet Lips a Little Closer to the Phone? He said, yes. And I said, well, I love him, but isn't he no longer with us? And he goes, right, but we're going to do some new technology with you. It's never been done before. We're going to overdub your voice on five of his tracks. And I said, wow, I was so excited about that. And I did do that. And I'll be honest with you, Dave, we put out three singles, but the one that I loved the most, that meant the most to me, was not a single, but it was called When Two Worlds Collide. And I just remember being in Woodland Studios over in East Nashville and being out in the big A room, the big room, and all the lights are out except for the lights over my lyrics. And Jim and I, our voices at the same time saying, that's what happens when two worlds collide. And when that happened, I got chills because I thought, oh, my gosh, two worlds really are colliding. I could feel his spirit. You know, it's just, I don't know, music to me just means so much more than the notes and the words on the page. It just goes so much deeper than that. And to be singing with someone as great as him, and even though he wasn't there physically, I felt like he was right there with me in the room.
That must have been very special, and obviously lives with you too today, those memories. And speaking of the power of music, as I was telling you before we came on the air, a couple of my favorite songs off of the CD are those kind of emotional songs. Last Time for Everything, which we're going to be sharing on the show a bit later, and another one called Deeper Waters, which I guess is almost like a gospel song. Your voice is just so powerful on it, and the song is so moving. I guess that is something you love to do with your songwriting, express those kind of emotions that touch everybody?
Yes, really and truly, it is, you know, that's when you really are getting the gift. You know, sometimes we write songs because they're fun to write and after you've written as many songs as I have, you know, I know how to write a song, but those moments of pure inspiration are, I feel like, really gifts from God. And in that particular case, my stepfather had been really sick with terminal cancer, and he was in the hospital, and my mother and I were up there 24 hours a day, and I was just picking up everything I could think of to know the right things to say and the right things to pray and for his recovery, which actually we did get four more wonderful years with Billy, but that's where that song sprang from, that experience. You know, it was a very difficult experience to go through, but through that came some really rich spiritual feelings and revelations, and a great song as well.
Now, if we look at the list here of songs that have been successful for you as recorded by other artists, we've got Patti Loveless, Hurt Me Bad in a Real Good Way, big hit for her. There's recordings in there from Brooks and Dunn, Tanya Tucker, Janie Fricke, I mentioned that one earlier, and John Conley. What's it been like to write these songs and have them recorded by such great acts and of course, hear these songs played on the radio over and over?
Well, it's exciting when it's happening. You know, when you're a writer and you have other really amazing artists that hear your songs and want to record them, it's exciting when it's happening. But as time goes by, it gets even more and more meaningful, you know, because it just does. I don't know. I think when you're right in the middle of things happening, sometimes you just go like, oh, wow, this is great. It's fun. But as time goes by and as your catalog grows and, you know, you get a little further down in life, you start going, that really was amazing, you know, so wonderful. Right. And you cherish those things. You know, I just cherish it, the fact that any other artist would want to record one of my songs.
And you had the opportunity, it was on Conway Twitty's, his final album that came out, I believe it was called Final Touches, and the song that he recorded of yours was I Hurt For You, which had been a big hit for you. What was it like to hear Conway's voice on that song?
I still can't believe it to this day how fortunate I was to have Conway sing one of my songs. I just remember being at the Grammy Awards, I believe it was, or no, it was the ACM Awards, the American Academy of Country Music Awards, and they called my name out for something. I can't remember, but it was right around the time of Baby I Lied. Oh, I know, it was for being nominated for the Horizon Award, and he was just so supportive. He kind of squinted his eyes and just gave me two thumbs up, you know. So I always loved Conway, and to be on his Final Touches album, well, I mean, I really can't even tell you what it means. It's just, he meant so much to so many people, and to be on that album is just really incredible.
And you were able to give Janie Fricke her first, I think it was either her first number one as an artist or definitely your number one, first number one as a songwriter for the song Don't Worry About Me, Baby. What was that? What was that like?
It was fun. Actually, I kind of wanted to record Don't Worry About Me, Baby myself, but the label that I was on was not really, for some reason, don't ask me why, they said they weren't into artists recording their own songs. I'll never understand that. But it kind of worked out great because my friend Don Gant, who was one of the publishers on it, he said, this is a hit song, and I don't care what anybody says. And so Kieran Kane and Bruce Chanel and I, who we were all the writers on that song, we piled into the car and we rolled down to Audio Media where Jim Ed Norman was producing Janie Fricke. And it was real old style. It was like the end of the old style days, you know, where you could barge in on the session and then get a song cut. And Don Gant said, Jim Ed, this is a smash. You got to hear this. So they stopped what they were doing, and they played this little rough demo that we'd made up in the attic down at Don's publishing company. And Jim Ed said, this is a hit. We're cutting it. And they cut it that day. And it went on to be a number one for her. It was my very first number one as a songwriter. And the funny thing was, the guy that at the label that had said it wasn't cool for an artist to cut their own songs, oh, several months later, right as it was becoming a big number one hit, we bumped into each other at a recording session that I was at, and we were just, you know, palling around. I wasn't mad at him or anything. I was glad I was having a number one record. He said, hey, congratulations, Deb. And I said, well, thank you. And I said, you know, I could really make you feel bad about that, couldn't I? And he goes, yeah, you could. And I go, but I'm not going to. And he goes, all right. I said, but I could, couldn't I? And he goes, yeah, you could. And I said, but I didn't, did I? And he goes, no, you didn't. I said, but I could, couldn't I? And we both burst out laughing. But you know what, Dave, really, when I think about it, I mean, even if I had pushed really hard for me to get to have it out, maybe the label that I was on at the time, you know, would not have made it the number one hit that it became. So I kind of feel like that, even when things don't work out the way we hope they will, that there is that master plan, you know. God is in the mix, and, you know, sometimes there's a better way than what we have in mind.
Yeah, you don't know what's down the next corner and what song is going to be available to you or that you're going to write next. to have a great opportunity. And I guess with all these songs, it's not necessarily a science, right? There's different factors, as you said. Your label may not have pushed it as much. There's so many factors that make a song a hit song, and so many things along the way that could happen that could change that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I guess we just have to keep trusting and keep trying. That's all we can do.
Now, is there, Deborah, an artist out there that's on your radar as far as you wanting them to cut one of your songs that it just hasn't happened yet, but you think you've got a song just right for them and you're almost there?
Well, not in particular. There are a lot of really great new artists out there, you know, a lot of great artists out there. I like some of the groups. Well, of course, I love Little Big Town. They're real good friends of mine. I love their music, incredible music. And Lady Antebellum, I love them. I've known Hillary since she was 16. You know, I mean, she's just adorable. And you know, I love them. It'd be great to have a cut by either one of them. But then there's some great new male artists. Jason Aldean, I really like him a lot.
Yep.
And I love Keith Urban so much. I've always loved his music. And let's see, who else? Oh, I love Dirk Bentley. I love Dirk Bentley and so much. And the female, of course. Oh, I love Blake Shelton. Well, I sang on Blake's album, his first album. I sang on two cuts on his first album. And so that would be great to get a Blake cut. And then I've always loved Miranda ever since she had out That's Just Charlie Talking. I fell in love with her music.
That is a great song, yeah. And that was probably on the Blake Shelton album with the song Austin.
Yep. Sure was. Yeah, My friend Bobby Braddock produced it. You know, Bobby was just inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. I was there that night with he and Reba and Gene Shepherd, and it was such a great celebration. And Bobby had such a huge lineup of great country stars singing all of his songs, and it was just a big celebration. But yeah, and so Bobby invited me to sing on the album with Blake.
Nice. Let's turn to some music from the new album, which is called Hear Me Now, from Deborah Allen. And the first song you co-wrote with Gary Burr, who has written tons of big songs out of Nashville. This song is called Anything Other Than Love. What can you tell us, Deborah, about the writing process and anything about the song?
Well, that's kind of a fun little story about that one, Dave. I was getting ready to go in town into Nashville. I live in Franklin, which is just outside of Nashville. I was kind of getting myself in the right mood to write, you know, sitting on my back steps with my guitar, kind of just opening myself up to the universe, you know, to see what would come through. And the phone rang, and it was my stepdaughter, Hillary. And she goes, "Hey, what's going on?" I said, "Oh, I'm just getting ready to go in and write with my friend, Gary Burr. What do you think I ought to write about today, Hillary?" And she goes, "Well, you got a lot of songs about love." She's, "I think you ought to write one about anything other than love." I thought that was so funny. So when I got down to Nashville, I told Gary what she had said, and we were both laughing about it. And I said, "Hey, you know, we just ought to literally write that." So that's what we did.
That is a wonderful story behind it. It's a great title, and it's amazing, and it shows that a song idea can come out of regular conversation.
Yeah, sometimes the best ones do, you know.
Well, let's share it now. It's a great song. It's your current single from the album, and then we'll come back and cover a lot more. This is Deborah Allen, Anything Other Than Love, here on In the Country.
I'm thinking things that can't be true.
And there's brand new music from my guest, Debra Allen. The song is Anything Other Than Love. And that is a fun song. It's catchy. And it, I understand it's doing quite well at radio. It's starting to climb the charts.
Oh, yes, it sure is. It took a big 7-point leap yesterday, and we're real excited about it. I'll tell you something else that's kind of fun about it, too, Dave. A good friend of mine, his name is Dustin Soper, and he's really, you know, he's real little computer tech savvy guy. Anyway, just for the fun of it, he and I picked out some pictures of, you know how it's so funny to see, like, say, for instance, a monkey with a dog, or, you know, how animals love each other that are so, like, we call them unlikely pairs. On my Facebook page and on YouTube, there's a little video, a little slideshow collage to that. We just did it for the fun of it. And there's some really cute images on there.
Oh, we'll look out for that for sure. That's awesome. When you're performing live, is that as big a thrill for you as being in a recording studio? Can you compare the two when you're in there getting the song perfect and putting it down on record and being on stage and sharing the song that way?
Well, it's kind of apples and oranges. You know, apples are great and so are oranges. I love them both. But it just brings out two different sides of my, you know, personality. In the studio, I'm having fun. That's when the creative process is really, really happening. But when I'm playing live, the most fun thing the thing I love most about that is the energy and the energy exchange with the audience, because I'm there for them, you know, and it's so much fun. And I've always loved people and love to have a good time with people, and also love to, you know, share emotions with people. So, you know, it's just so different. I mean, I love them both, but I don't know. It's just two different things.
Two different experiences. Mm-hmm. When you have those songs that move the listener, and we talked about them earlier, and one of them we're going to play in a few moments, first, last time for everything, it must be great to get the feedback from your fans and listeners when they've heard the song and it's become a part of their life because it's helped them through a time and helped to comfort them. Can you talk about what that's like to hear that kind of feedback?
Yeah, it is very touching, you know, and it's very, I don't know, it's very humbling, really, to know that, you know, that you have something that's a part of you that's meant so much to someone else. Especially the one that you were talking about last time for everything, and Deeper Waters as well, and now even Amazing Graceland, especially for the people who love Elvis. But, you know, but back to last time for everything, I've gotten so many emails and letters and everything with people pouring out their hearts and sharing their story about how that song has touched them, and it just really means a lot. And I think, you know, it provides an outlet for people to, you know, I think we all sometimes keep things bottled up inside of us and pent up inside of us, and sometimes just a song like that will help people talk about things that maybe otherwise they might have just kept to themselves.
Definitely, and the song is beautiful, that the writing, melody, and of course your vocals, and also the production on it helps too. It's sort of a sparser production, so it keeps the emotion in the song.
Well, thank you. You know, I produced everything on my album, but I will say that three of the tracks on my album, Bobby Braddock produced, and he produced one called What Makes a Woman, and All That I Want, and Last Time for Everything.
Wow.
So
beautiful job.
He'll enjoy knowing that you appreciated the production on that.
Definitely. It really aided, I guess, in the message of the song, too. It just contributed to the overall impact. Let's talk for a moment about Baby, I Lied. And I mean, I've heard this song on the radio so many times, which is a great thing because I love it. It was a country and pop crossover. Well-written song, just a great song. And you earned a Grammy nomination for the songwriting aspect of it, as well as the singing. Can you talk about what that song did for your career and sort of the legacy of it?
Well, you know, just the other day, not long ago, well, back at Fanfare, I had a young artist ask me, "Do you ever get tired of singing Baby, I Lied?" I said, "No, I don't. I love singing Baby, I Lied as much, if not more now, than I ever have in my life." Baby, I Lied was just a great song that changed my life, you know. I'd been really writing a lot and also kind of putting the word out that I was looking for that really big career song for me. But, of course, you know, it's hard when you're a new artist to get writers to let go of their material. I mean, they want to go with the artists that are already hot. So I was getting some pretty good songs, but not that song that I needed. So, you know, I was together with Rafe Van Hoy and Rory Burke one afternoon, and we just dug in. And well, actually, the way it happened was Rafe and I used to write a lot together. We wrote together so much that it was like we could read each other's minds. So Rory was sort of new in the mix, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to throw an idea out, and I'm going to, you know, if you don't like it, don't worry about it. It's not going to hurt my feelings." So I don't even remember what idea it was that he mentioned, but it must not have gotten a real big response from either one of us. And he said, "Hey, wait a minute. Did I say I wouldn't be hurt? I lied." And when he said that, I looked at Rory and I went, "Oh, my God, Rory, that's it. Did I say I wouldn't be hurt if our love just didn't work? Baby,
wow.
I lied." And right after that, it all fell into place. And so, you know, and that is the song. The reason I love it so much is because of that song. You know, I got to do American Bandstand with Dick Clark. I got to do Solid Gold, and I got to travel all over the world. And still to this day, you know, I'm so honored to know that it's in gold rotation all over the United States, I know for sure, and maybe in Canada too, I hope.
Yep, oh yeah. It's still getting play, and of course, back in the day, all that airplay. And did you realize at the time that it could cross from country to pop? I guess that was going on a bit at the time with artists.
Yeah, it was. Juice Newton had done some of that, and I was actually on the same label that she was on. And again, that was Joe Galante, and you know, he was very, very good at marketing and planning. And you know, I think that it was just an effort to expand the appreciation of country music. You know, it wasn't that the music was really that. It was a big arrangement, and you know, but that song needed to be a big arrangement. But it really wasn't all that much different. It was just that we were broadening the scope of listeners. And so, and to be honest with you, Dave, technically it was a big pop record that crossed backwards in the country. Isn't that wild?
That is interesting.
I mean, and then right after that, I had a number one country song because, you know, I was from Nashville and Memphis, and my record label was in Nashville, so it made total sense. But that song just was so unusual in so many ways.
That's great. It's kind of like today with the song by Lady Antebellum, "Need You Now," which country, pop, and just climbed the charts on both.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm so excited about how well they're doing. It's just wonderful to watch their records and their career take off.
Now, if we go back a bit in time, can you share a bit of the story of when you had moved to Nashville from Memphis? And it wasn't too long before the legend Roy Orbison discovered you. How did that happen?
Well, just by accident, really. When I first moved to Nashville, I had gotten a job and made friends with the people at the International House of Pancakes. Well, I was a waitress for a little short while, and I found out pretty quickly that I really wasn't that good of a waitress. But I loved all the friends that I had made there, and I'd go there and I'd eat because it was one of the places that I could go by myself and not feel like, you know, the lonely girl, like the Steve Martin movie, you know. But one morning I was having breakfast, and I looked across there, and I saw this man with real, real black hair and sunglasses, and then this other guy with salt and pepper hair. And I went, I know those guys are in the music business. They just have to be, because they look too, you know, they look rock and roll. They're just the guy to be in the music business. So remember now, take into consideration that I was 18 years old when I tell the rest of this, but
sure.
I go over to the booth where they're sitting, and I go, excuse me, but are y'all in the insurance business? And they go, no, darling, we're in the music business. So I slide into the booth real quick, and I go, hey, listen, that's what I was thinking. I'm a singer, and I'm trying to get started. So we started talking, and there I found myself sitting with Roy Orbison and Joe Melson, and, you know, they wrote Pretty Woman together, and they were just very, very kind and receptive to me. And then not long after that, I was contacted by Joe, and he got me to come in and sing on a couple of tracks that Roy had recorded, and I sang some background parts on it. And it wasn't like one of his big, big records. I think it was a compilation that they were selling, but
right. Still,
it was for Roy Orbison, and
oh,
that was pretty incredible.
What an incredible story. You hear about these starts in music, and it's great to hear it in your own words, because a lot of magic in that moment, no doubt.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. I can tell you what I had on. I can tell you what color my feet. I was really into like this 40s-ish look, and I had on this red dress that came in at my waist and kind of flared out and went just right to my knee. And then I was really, really, at that time, really into dark red fingernail polish, even though
right.
my fingernails are too short for fingernail polish. I mean, I can just see. I can see
you
myself
can see
doing
that.
It's almost like watching a movie in my mind.
That's amazing how memories are like that. They're painted that vividly. Let's turn to another song, and this is one we've talked a couple of times about, Last Time for Everything, from the new album, which is called Hear Me Now. Of course, I'm speaking with Deborah Allen. And share a bit about the song here. This one, as I heard it for the first time recently, I mean, as I've mentioned before, really moved me. What's the inspiration behind it, and what should listeners listen for?
Well, there's a Last Time for Everything. I don't know really where it came from. It just, you know, kind of sprang forth, and I had written the first verse in the entire chorus, and I had really planned on writing the entire song by myself, and but I sort of had put it away. You know how you get busy, and, you know, you mean to finish things, and they're just there. After that, it was about a few months later, then, unfortunately, 9/11 happened, and I thought, gosh, it reminds me of that passage that I wrote, you know, there's a last time for everything. And I thought to myself that a lot of the people who had lost their loved ones must feel this way, you know, and because you never know when you see someone, if you're ever going to see them again, you just never know that. And I'm sure on that morning they never knew that was the last time they'd ever see them. But it just made me think of that. So I pulled my song out again to take a look at it. And I was also scheduled to write with my good friend Curtis Wright. Well, he came to the door that day, and we were kind of tossing around some ideas. And I said, hey, Curtis, here's what I'm getting ready to finish. And I said, I just played him, sang him a little bit of it and read him the words. And then I moved on, and we were perusing through ideas. And he said, I can't get that song off my mind. And I said, and see, he had just confided in me that, like, just a couple of weeks before, he had lost his sister to cancer. So he was still grieving about that. And he was so sad. And I said, Curtis, you know what? You're one of my best friends. I said, I really was going to write this song. But if I was going to write it with someone else, there's nobody else on earth I'd rather write it with, because I feel like you can definitely relate. So we finished it up that afternoon, and I'm just, you know, I just am so glad that in the end that it's a song that really moves people out. Like I said, I get a lot of letters, a lot of emails, and I love getting them. And, you know, my husband laughs at me because he always says, boy, I've never seen anybody like to get mail more than you. But I do. I love to get emails. I love to correspond with people, you know.
Yeah, it's great to get feedback when on something you've done like that, and to know that other people are moved by it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's part of the joy in doing it, you know. I mean, it's fun to sing in the shower, but it's a whole lot more fun to sing when you know people are listening.
That's a great quote. You're right. I mean, all the things we do, if we're communicating, you're right, we only know how well we're doing and how much it's affecting someone by getting those emails or phone calls.
Exactly. And then that goes back to playing live, too. You know, it's so much. Of course, if we weren't in the studio and recording it, no one would really get to hear it. But getting out and playing live and seeing the response and hearing the stories back, that really is so rewarding, and that's the big payoff.
No doubt. Well, let's share the song now, and then we've got a few more things to talk about when we come back. This is Deborah Allen and Last Time for Everything here on In the Country.
I still taste his kiss, warm on my lips, feel the fire in his touch, and the love that I hear those three little words. Each time he says goodbye, it's like he always knew what I never realized. There's a last time for everything, a tomorrow never comes, a moment you never dreamed could leave so many dreams undone. One thing in life is certain, it's not as certain as it seems. So while there's blue sky above you, take the time. There's a last time for everything. The days we are given are precious and few. Savor each sunrise, whatever you do. Don't
one thing in life is certain.
beautiful new song from Deborah Allen. That is called Last Time for Everything from her new album called Hear Me Now. And again, Deborah, such a heartfelt performance. You really deliver on the vocal.
Thank you. I was sitting here listening to it while you were playing it, and I was just remembering my husband, Raymond Hicks. His dad had passed away. And this sounds terrible, and I did not want to go along with this at all, but they insisted. He insisted, and his mother insisted. See, Bobby had this recording session set, and you know, getting that many great musicians of the perfect combination that you wanted in the same room at one time is kind of, you know, you're lucky to get them all the exact ones you want.
For sure.
Bobby had this thing all set up. But then Jim passed away. He had a sudden heart attack, and we were devastated. And I was, you know, just like, well, I'm going to Texas. That's where Raymond's mother lives. His mother called and said, now, you know good and well, Jim would not want you to miss out on that. He's going to want you to do it. He's going to want you to sing that song, and he's going to want you to. And I just said, oh, I don't really feel right about that. I want to be with all of you. And she goes, we know you'll be there in spirit. You go and do what you got to do. So wasn't that sweet? And I remember that night seeing it. I remember really how deeply I felt when I sang that song. It's almost about to make me cry remembering it.
You can hear that in the song that you were feeling it. You can definitely tell. And that's so often the case with a performance, right? I mean, if you're feeling it like you did, and I'm sure other times when you sing this, that comes back, the audience can pick up on the emotion in it.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's one of the reasons why that particular song, a lot of people have reached out to me to, you know, talk to me through that song and comment and open their hearts to me. That really, really, really means a lot to me.
Yeah, I think that's when you're taking music to another level. I mean, there's the enjoyment of it, and there's fun songs. But songs like that, to me, I look at them, they're either a philosophy of life or they're reminders to us. When we hear a song, we kind of stop and listen to it, and that message stays with us. And maybe we pick up the phone and make that call or send an email hearing something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right, and that's why, you know, to me, like I said, you know, I definitely know how to write songs now. I've written a lot of them, but still, you know, it's those magic moments where your emotions and your heart and soul is connected with the song. You know, there's no division between what you're thinking and what you're feeling. It's just coming from almost, you know, somewhere else that those are the ones, and I think I definitely feel that way about Last Time for Everything, and it really means a lot to me that you feel that way about it too.
Now, Deborah, do you have, getting back to Elvis for a moment, and this is going to be a tough question, but a favorite Elvis song that you either like to listen to or one that you like to sing at your shows?
Well, let's see. Well, you're right. That is a tough question because I like so many Elvis songs, but, you know, of course, I like Love Me Tender, and I love a lot of the beautiful ballads that he did. But one of my favorites is just simply Good Old Hound Dog, you know, because I love Hound Dog. And I taught Hound Dog to Miley Cyrus when she was a little kid. I was over at Billy Ray's. Billy and I had done this duet that I produced on us. And so he asked us out to come, Raymond and I, come out to their house out in the country. And when he came to the gate, Miley was had her arms around his neck. He rode down on his motorcycle. And I thought, good Lord, he's so good looking and she's so precious. He reminds me of Elvis and she reminds me of Lisa Marie. They were just, I don't know, just, you know, it was just a striking image. So we go up to the house and we're hanging out up there and out by the pool. And Miley comes out in her little bathing suit and her sunglasses. And I mean, she's probably about 6 or 7 or I don't know, 8, I don't know, just a little
kid,
you know.
Sure, just a young one, yeah.
Yeah, just a young one, and I said, so, hey, Miley, I said, do you think he's a little? And I said, well, what do you say? And she really didn't have something she was going to say. And I said, hey, I got one for you. And she goes, what? And I said, you ain't nothing but a hound dog, like Elvis Presley. You want to learn it? She goes, yeah. So I stood up and I put my hand on my hip, because I'm pretty animated anyway. I put my hand on my hip. I said, do like this. I go, well, and she goes, well. We went through the whole song, acting it out. And then the next thing I knew, it wasn't long after that, Billy had her up on stage singing with her, with him, at his fanfare shows and a lot of shows. And, you know, she took off and went from there. But they're just some precious people and wonderful, and I love them. That's just a fun memory about an Elvis song.
That is a great story. I really enjoyed hearing that, and I can kind of picture the fun the two of you would have had. Now, you also have discovered some other talent, and coming forward to present day, there's an artist you're working with now producing an album that's going to be released, I guess, later this year or early next year. Margaret Phillips, can you talk a bit about working with her? I went online and saw a couple of things I listened to, and she's got a great voice.
Yes, she does. She's really come a long ways, and I'm real proud of the progress that she's made, and I think she's going to, you know, have a bright future. If, you know, it's a lot of it is just staying focused on the direction and having the right opportunities. And, you know, I've worked with her from the time she was 17 until 19, and she's, you know, really grown a lot.
It must be great to work with young talent, new talent, and to write songs for them, of course, is what you're doing with her as well, and to hear the songs come alive with her performance.
Yeah, you know, I have worked with a lot of young artists, and that is one of the fun things about it is, you know, it's great to get some fun perspectives, you know, and it's always inspiring to work with a lot of young artists. Another young artist that I wrote some songs with is a girl by the name of Callie Champion. And did you hear the song It Better Be Big on the album? Just to give you an example how you know, the young spirit can inspire you, we were hanging out one day and she saw my wedding ring, which is a nice wedding ring. It's not like 10 carats or anything, but it's just a nice ring. And she goes, yeah. Now, when I get married, I'm going to have me a big ring like that. That's what I'm talking about. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. It better be big, you know. Let's write it about a wedding ring. I would have never thought to do that, you know.
Isn't that great that idea inspired it and then the two of you went and wrote it?
Yeah, it really is. So, you know, Margaret's really talented. Callie's talented. I've worked with some other really young up-and-comers that are very, very talented as well. And it's just exciting to watch them grow, just to see that seed of a desire and a dream evolve into a reality for them. That's so much fun.
I'll bet. Now, aside from your songwriting and singing and all the success there, you are getting ready to release a Christmas book called The Loneliest Christmas Tree. I love the title. Can you tell us a bit about that and when exactly it'll be available?
Yes, I am so glad you brought that up. I'm very excited about that. And that is just another example of how, you know, we want things to happen when we want them to happen. And sometimes we're like, well, why isn't this happening, you know, the way it should happen? And, it's just crazy. So I was writing with Kiss Brooks, I guess it was about 4 months ago, and we were walking out to his car, but it was actually to his motorcycle. And so we were walking out to his motorcycle, and I was saying, well, how are the kids doing? And he was telling me about his son, how talented he is, and what all he wants to do. And then he said, and he goes, oh, and Molly is such a great artist, Deb. You ought to go to her website and check out some of her art. I said, okay, well, what is that website? And it's winkout.com is Molly's website. So I go to winkout.com, and I look on there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, Molly really is talented. And see, my mother had always said to me, she was always like a little frustrated. Because she knew I had written this Christmas book quite a while back, and she said, I'm telling you, I just don't understand why you can't get that Christmas book done. And I was like, oh, I know, I can't understand it either. But one of the missing pieces was an illustrator. So when I saw Molly's art, something clicked, and I thought, I'm going to call her up. So I called up Molly and asked her if I could read my book to her. And the book is called The Loneliest Christmas Tree, and it'll be available on my website real soon. But I said, could I read it to you? And she said, yeah, I'd love to hear it. So I read her the book, and at the end of the book, she said, when did you write this story? And I said, well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, Molly. It's been a while back, and it was in 1986. And she goes, oh, my gosh, that's the year that I was born. And I said, you're kidding me. And she goes, and guess what day I was born on? I said, what day? And she said, Christmas Eve. And I said, oh, that does it. If you like this book, you've got to do it. She goes, I love this book, and I want to do it. So we're super excited about it. And I was going to mention this to you anyway, but anybody that wants to know about my new album or is interested in the book may not be listed yet, but it will be in the next few days. But the website link is just simply DeborahAllen.com. And the way you spell my name is DeborahAllen.com. And, if you want to get a book there, I'll be glad to send you an autographed copy.
We'll, of course, follow you at the site to both the album and also the new book. I love the title, so I guess there's a story in it to do with, obviously, A Lonely Christmas Tree. It sounds like a very appealing story with a happy ending, I'm sure.
Thank you. It does have a happy ending, and it has a very unlikely hero.
I've never written another book since. Maybe I will now that I've gotten this one published, but it has a meter to it, and it's so fun. I love to read it out loud to children, but it's about a Christmas tree, and he's just a scrawny little Christmas tree, and nobody wants him. He gets his hopes up every year, and he's passed over every year, and he's, you know, year after year, tier after tier, Christmas would come and disappear, taking the forest until it was clear that he was the loneliest Christmas tree and the only one never meant to be dressed up in tinsel and twinkling lights with an angel above shining out in the night. But he was so lonely that guess what happens? Guess what happens? After all of his friends get taken, what's going on at the same time is the lights of the city grow brighter and closer and closer and closer. And soon comes the day of the digger and dozer, bobcats, you know, steamrollers, cranes, and all of that. So the city grows up around him. And suddenly, he becomes this huge, tall Christmas tree. And he realizes each Christmas as he sees people taking their tiny trees home, he's 30 feet wide and 10 stories tall, he realizes that right where he stands is where he belongs. But then this old guy, this polyester man, wants to come and chop him down and put up a parking lot. Well, to make a long story short, not I'm giving away a lot of it, but there's a homeless lady saves the day with her belief. She says a special prayer. She reaches out to a lot of people in this special prayer. She says a very special prayer, and she and her friends, her homeless friends help save the tree, and it's just a beautiful story. And what's wild about that is the name of the homeless lady is Christmas Carol, and the character for her is based on a homeless lady that I had made friends with. I didn't know that I was going to name her Christmas Carol. Each day when I would wake up to write the book, I was just as eager to see what was going to happen next, you know, as anybody that would get the book and turn the page now. But right at the very end, when she's talking to the mayor, making her plea to save the tree, and he just loves her, and he dubs her Christmas Carol, and all of this. Yeah, I'm telling you, life is so funny. You know, I never knew when I was making friends with Carol that she was going to wind up playing such a big role in this book. And you know, she's no longer with us. She passed away. She was a homeless lady here in Nashville. She's no longer with us. But, you know, I like the fact that in this book that it just shows that, you know, you don't have to be rich. You don't have to be famous. you just have to be a person with a heart and a belief in something, and you can save a tree, you can make things happen.
What a great message, Deborah. In the book and in your songs, obviously that creative spirit allows you to write in both kinds of mediums. And it's just terrific. It's been such a pleasure sharing almost now this past hour with you, chatting. Great stories we shared, and also the two terrific songs from your album, Hear Me Now. Thanks so much, Deborah, for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been so much fun talking with you, Dave. I've really, really enjoyed it so much. And I just want to thank you and thank all of your listeners, and really seriously invite you all to come to my website, DeborahAllen.com, and on Facebook, my name on my fan page is Deborah Allen Official, and on Twitter, I'm even Twittering these days, it's Deborah Allen, and my lucky number 3, Deborah Allen 3. So I hope to hear from all of you, and it's never a bother to hear from anybody. I love it, and thank you so much. Hey, and you know, my good friend Michelle Wright is from Canada, and she's great,
sure,
and I'm a huge fan also of Carolyn Dawn Johnson, and I'm actually getting ready to do a show down in Florida with a young guitar player that's been in Nashville for a short time. He's from Canada, too. His name is Trevor Findlay, and
terrific,
really sweet, wonderful guy, and another friend I just met from Canada recently, her name is Rochelle Lynn, and her dad played bass with Brian Adams. So, you know, my path seems to cross with a lot of great creative Canadian people.
Well, that's great to know. Yeah, those are all great names, and it's good to know you've got that Canadian connection as well. Again, Deborah, a real pleasure. Hope to do this again in the future. There's so much more we could discuss, and again, it's been a real delight.
Thank you so much, Dave.
My guest today has been country artist Deborah Allen, and again, her brand new album is called Hear Me Now. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.